Ignition sequence start.
Gordon for three.
Moonlight, you guys won Best Picture.
Boy who lived. Come to die.
Drink.
And if you want it, and if you want to work hard enough for it, it can be so.
Three, two,
one.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the last podcast on Earth. I'm your host, Mr. Robot, with my co-host, Mr. Skywalker. What's up, man? How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good. You know, it's nice to finally be around.
Yeah, this has been a long time coming. We've been talking for quite some time about doing a podcast type show, video chat type thing. And, you know, this podcast is really just to talk about what's going on in the pop culture world, whether that's the Oscars, sports, movies. You know, Game of Thrones is really hot right now. Yeah. Avengers, Endgame, NBA playoffs, even the NHL's kicking and screaming.
Yeah, so we're trying to go for the fan perspective, something that tends to get lost, you know.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you got all these big sports conglomerates in the world right now, putting their two cents in. They keep it pretty negative most of the time, but we're just trying to, like, you know, have that conversation that you do with your buddies on the way to work, back home, whatever the case may be. So, you know, that being said, let's just get into it. So, the first topic, Damian Lillard last night.
Woo! That man.
Sent OKC crying home. That whole, like, this whole series, I'm going to be, like, 100. I did not really watch it. But once I saw, like, the battles and the trash talking back and forth, I kind of, like, started paying attention.
Oh, yeah.
People are going to have to start, like, taking, like, notice on Damian Lillard, man. Like, this guy is serious.
So, off mic, you and I had a conversation earlier in the year on, like, whether or not he was considered underrated. And personally, I thought he was just rated. Because, you know, when everyone says you're underrated, you're no longer underrated. But really, like, this has just been a showing out party for the kid. Like, he's at elite level now. And, like, you can't really doubt that guy anymore.
What do you think about, like, everyone talking about, you know, who's the best point guard in the league, and maybe, like, this means Damian Lillard is one of the top dogs now, and Westbrook maybe is kind of falling out of his prime?
Oh, no, I totally agree. I think he's moved up into elite status. Like, he's a clear superstar now. Like, he's probably top three in terms of, we still have, like, Steph Curry is the best point guard in the league. Mm-hmm. I think that's widely accepted, and that's going to continue to stay that way for the time being, just because of how much he's impacted the game. Kyrie Irving is number two because that man is magical. He's just an absolute magician. But I think that Lillard's slowly getting up to that spot. Like, he's in that realm of unguardable.
Right.
Like, those three guys can get you a bucket, like, whenever you need one. Like,
totally.
I was just, my mouth hit the floor when I saw where he took that shot from. I'm like, that's the kind of shot you have the confidence to take, like, even in a regular season, let alone, like, the playoff closer. Like, that just remarkable.
Yeah, it's crazy. And I mean, like, one of my buddies and I were talking about, like, Kyrie versus Dame and Seth and all. I mean, Steph. I'm a Duke guy, so I got Seth on my mind.
Seth and he got was a cooking. Few more years left.
Exactly. Yeah, he's also a Portland dude too. But yeah.
Shout out to him though. Talking smack on the bench. Right
before
the shot.
Yo, that was crazy. That the last shot, he legit is just looking at the bench like, good night, everyone. Enjoy the off season. It was crazy. But so me and my buddy were talking about, like, top point guards and all, and I kind of made the argument. I was like, I don't know, man. Like, it's tough. You can make an argument, I think, for either or any of those guys. But I feel like Steph has so much help. But, like, again, my boy, he made the argument, or one of my boys made the argument, well, before he had KD, he was really balling. So maybe, you know, if he didn't have all the extra help, maybe he would have skyrocketed. Then you look at Kyrie. I'm a Cleveland guy, as you know, as everyone else does. Kyrie was, like, he always had the ability to take over these games, but I never felt like that leadership. But now that he stepped into this role, like, he's learned out of LeBron, he's got his own thing going. I feel like now he's kind of, like, he's got to be in that MVP conversation.
Oh, for sure. I think it's been a turbulent season for the Celtics, but yeah, I agree.
But what's interesting, right, is Dame is actually to do with all the accolades and the All-NBAs and all that stuff, but he doesn't get really too much chatter about being the best point guard. And when I think about it, right, like you switch Damian Lillard with Kyrie, I think Kyrie could probably beat OKC. I'm not totally convinced about Steph Curry. I'm gonna be like 100% serious.
Okay.
Because I think he's one of those guys who benefits from having a Klay Thompson around him. And I'm not saying Klay's the leader by any stretch of the like imagination.
Yeah, I agree.
But you know, I think that there's definitely something to be said about, you know, having those extra guys to like let your game elevate a bit. But I really think that Damian, like, this is very much, like you said, his coming out party. And I think that Westbrook, like, he relies so much on athleticism. Mm-hmm. And I think the triple-double is, like, not that it's overblown. I'm a big triple-double guy. Love Big O. But it's become so, how do you say, like just... people so infatuated with this triple-double stat,
mm-hmm.
kind of how people were for a little bit about the double-doubles back when, like, Kevin Love and Dwight Howard were doing it.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Oh, how long is the streak going to go? And all that. But it's the way LeBron gets the triple-double when you're watching it, it feels more natural, it feels more fluid. When you watch Westbrook, it's like, it almost seems like he's pushing his teammates out the way, he's really going for it, and that kind of takes away from the beauty of it. And what I realized actually watching the game yesterday was he's going so fast sometimes that the big men are like almost out of breath, you know, and he's not realizing that he's kind of like hurting his teammates' game a bit, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think the biggest issue with Westbrook is he's got so much intensity, but he just doesn't know how to channel it. I think the biggest thing with him is that he relentlessly tries to impose his will on the game instead of adapting, and that's what most of the all-time greats are able to do successfully. Like, Damian Lillard is able to adapt to the point where, I remember in game three I was watching, dude blew up for 25 points in the third quarter. I know they lost at the end, but yeah. Like in moments where something's not working, like he was held scoreless at the beginning, to then make those adjustments and bring yourself back into the game. You got players like Kyrie where he's now like kind of doing what Kobe used to do, and he'd facilitate mm-hmm. towards the beginning of the game and get people going, get people in rhythm, and then when it comes down to it, he just takes over. Similar situation with Steph Curry. Westbrook doesn't know how to slow down. Like, he's just one speed, 100%, like 100 miles per hour. And he just kind of gets caught up. He was focused more on going tit for tat with Damian Lillard throughout the entire series rather than making the best basketball plays. And right. I do think there is something to be said about if Paul George's shoulder wasn't injured down the stretch of the season, I don't think it just goes five games. I think it's more potential that the series would have been extended. But I think that Damian Lillard so thoroughly outplayed Russell Westbrook, and same goes for CJ McCollum. Like, just the team overall just proved that it was that much better than Oklahoma City.
And so. Real quick, so Denver and the Spurs are kind of the next round potential opponent. So if it's Denver, how do you think Portland holds up?
I think Portland fares pretty well just due to their overall playoff experience. There is going to be a question to be said about how they match up well with Nikola Jokic, or Nikola Jokic. I'm still fuzzy on the pronunciation.
Yeah, Jokic,
but,
I believe.
Jokic just... I had him on my fantasy league. Kid's an absolute monster. But the biggest issue with him is that he's not necessarily aggressive. Like, there are nights where he'll go out. I think it was game four against the Spurs. Nikola Jokic just went out and like had himself a game and really put them over the top. Because when he's facilitating, when he's rebounding, when he's scoring aggressively, like, he is the heart and soul of that team. So they're incredibly hard to beat. But the thing is that he's not always – he's a facilitate-first kind of player. He's kind of similar to LeBron and some of those other pass-first guys where he's looking to get the teammates involved, and if their shots aren't falling or if, like, he misses four shots, he's going to elect to not take them instead of continue shooting. So he's kind of like the anti-Westbrook.
Right.
So I think that it depends on how Jokic and Murray play. Murray is very spotty. He's a fringe all-star. But he can have nights where he, like in game two, where he just goes off. And he can have nights where he just an absolute dud. So I think it's how they match it with Jokic and whether or not what the defensive plan for Jamal Murray is. Spurs, I don't know. Spurs are kind of a wild card. I don't even know if they can. I don't even know if they can beat the Nuggets at this point. They were so great game one, had them up by like 19 twice in game two and blew that lead. Thoroughly dominated them in game three, and then ever since then it's just been like I don't know. So it's tough.
Yeah, and speak of tough, that just sounds like a little bit like the Avengers.
Talk about insurmountable leads, you know, going against the odds of Golden State.
Exactly. I'm going to move into that conversation as we transition out of the basketball conversation. That just kind of reminded me, you just saying, don't know how it's going to end. Avengers and Game of Thrones, that is the big entertainment, television, movie experience. This might be the biggest weekend ever if you think about it, like box office-wise.
Two different entities with like 10 plus years in the making. That's crazy. Just
crazy. Absolutely. I don't, like, has there ever been anything like this in history?
Nah.
I mean, imagine if like one of these series went to Game 7, you know? It's like, it's crazy. And I think they said the Bucks and Celtics also might be on Saturday as well. I mean, can you imagine?
Ooh, that'd be... I hope the schedules line up.
Yeah, it's just crazy. It's just crazy. Like, we're living, like, what a time to be alive. You know what I mean?
Oh, for sure, dude. I'm seeing Endgame tomorrow. I cannot be more excited.
Oh, jealous. You betrayed me, I know. I'm gonna see it Friday, though. I'm going to see it Friday.
I'm going to be on Zero Dark 30. Like, you won't hear from me. I ain't gonna say nothing.
I'm getting nervous, man. I made it this far. I think Twitter's been pretty good about not like spoiling anything. There hasn't been much out there.
I blocked all related keywords.
Dude, I am going completely raw, and I did not mute a word or anything. And honestly, I'm like, hey, this is Russian roulette at this point, right?
Damn,
but what are you thinking about the ending for Endgame? How do you think they should end it? And how do you think they will?
Oh, jeez, man, dude. It's tough to say just because of everything that's gone into it. Yeah. I know that there have been a lot of theories on what they're going to do. Some people say that the Avengers are going to go back in time or some crap, which I think would just undermine a lot of the events that happened already. So I don't think that's possible. Yeah. But it's going to be interesting because I think... it's going to be interesting how they play it out because it really just looks like they're just going to try and find Thanos. They don't even know if they can bring people back, but they're just going to try and kill him. And, like, that's kind of crazy to think of. Like, it would be interesting to see that direction if they take it where instead of they're just avenging the death of their friends because they don't know if it's feasibly possible to, like, reverse everything that happened because... At the end of Infinity War, the gauntlet looked kind of like messed up.
Yeah.
Right after the infamous snap, it looked all like broken. So it's like, can you even reverse what he did? Which we all can assume that that's going to be the case. But it's going to be...
Well, I'm actually thinking it might be like a life for a life, soul for soul type of ordeal. Because, and I think what you just said might be true. Is like maybe it is... irreversible and they can't go back, but the only way that they can is by sacrificing something. And what better group to sacrifice than the Avengers themselves? I mean, we know just from, you know, out of context that some of the actors, this is the end of their tenure with their contracts. Mm-hmm. We know that, you know, Spider-Man Homecoming is supposed to be the end of Phase 3. So, who's really to say? I mean, I'm actually kind of curious to know who you think is going to take over the franchise. Because from watching Captain Marvel and Spider-Man, I personally feel like I don't hate the idea of Tom Holland taking over the series from Robert Downey Jr.
That's interesting. I wouldn't be opposed to that either. I haven't seen Captain Marvel, unfortunately. I'm going to try and squeeze that in at some point. Probably not going to be able to. So I'm going to have to go in, raw, so to speak.
Right.
But I do kind of think that with the success that she's had in the movie hit all those box office records, I think that Captain Marvel and Black Panther are probably going to be like the two main leaders just due to sheer popularity, I want to say.
Yeah. I mean, it's also... goes into that whole thing too of like the times we're living in now, it's like we've had the white leader for quite some time, so maybe it's time for, you know, a woman to lead the charge, or a person of color, which, again, I'm not opposed to, as long as it's well done. Exactly. It's just got to be well done. It doesn't really matter who's on top, and it seems like they've done that. I actually really enjoyed Captain Marvel. It felt a bit like Iron Man to me, or the original Captain America's, where it wasn't so focused. It almost feels like all these Marvel movies that come out now are so focused on the Endgame, the Avengers, and this was like a character study about this character that literally, I think, you know, the common person just has no idea about. You know, if you're a comic book nerd, you might know this person.
Yeah.
But, you know, I went with my girlfriend, had no idea who it was. She thoroughly enjoyed it. And it's one of those movies that I say I'd love to show my future daughter one day, just so, like, they have someone to look up to and enjoy. And I think critics get really harsh and, like, very critical of these, like, new movies and different styles, or they go, well, you know, that movie was pretty good, but it wasn't life-changing. It's like, well, you know, it's like Black Panther. It's like, maybe the story doesn't have to be The Dark Knight. It doesn't have to be the original Iron Man, where it just completely, like, throws you out of your seat. But what it is important is that it gives a new generation of people to fall in love with new characters and look up to these icons and things like that. So, I mean, I personally was just thinking Tom Holland's Spider-Man because the movie was so successful. And there's always been this debate of, you know, oh, Tobey Maguire's my Spider-Man, or what was the other kid's name? Garfield.
Yeah,
Andrew Garfield is my Spider-Man. And now, you know, with the not Ultimate Spider-Man, the Spider-Universe, you have that one. And I kind of come to the conclusion that I'm like, I think we don't really care who's Spider-Man. They can meet as many Spider-Mans as we want, as we need. It's such a relatable story. It's this kid who is just trying to be a kid, and there's so much going on in the world. And I think, you know, whether you're a middle school kid trying to, you know, make your lunch for the next day, or you're a high school kid trying to run to practice, balance your homework, figure out college, or you're just fresh out of college and you're trying to balance, you know, friends, life, student loans, it's like, there's always this balance. And I think that's what Spider-Man is really interesting about. It's this character about balance and trying to, like, balance work and life and relationships and love and sacrifice and family.
Yeah, exactly.
That's why I've always found that character to be really relatable to people, which I think, no pun intended, it's like the web between these different characters and the networking of each other. And it's not to say that I don't think Black Panther or Captain Marvel doesn't qualify, or they wouldn't be great at it, but that's just kind of what I was thinking.
Okay. So, I understand him being like the moral leader of the group. I don't necessarily think that they'd make him like... Are we talking about the, like, the actual leader of the Avengers group, or the main headlining act for the franchise going forward?
I would say, I was talking about the leader of the group, more like the person that they lean back on. And he's really intelligent as well.
True, yeah.
So
I think we need more time for him to mature within the film.
Oh, totally.
They're definitely going to get to that point, but I can see them moving in that direction. I just think of, I agree with what you were saying before when talking about giving women and people of color, like, the opportunity, like, to have these stories. And it doesn't necessarily matter how groundbreaking the story narrative is. Like, I agree that there have been so many iterations of a lot of stories before, but the thing is that women and people of color haven't been allowed to have those stories. So it doesn't need to be a groundbreaking experience. It just needs to be, like, just putting a person in the position to have that story told about them, to then make it relatable, to better, you know, communicate or represent the larger demographic, is super important. So I think that it would really say something to have those two be the focal leaders of the franchise going forward. But I do agree with, you know, not everybody can relate to the king of high technologically advanced culture and kingdom, or a half alien girl who got powers from space.
Right, so, exactly.
I understand that point.
And I think, like, going back to your point of, like, who's the franchise or the face versus who's the actual leader, in my personal opinion, I look at Iron Man more as the actual leader behind the scenes, the guy that people rally around. Whereas Captain America is the face of the franchise. He's the poster boy. He's the one that, you know, when you look at the lineup, you want him in the middle. But so I look at it personally, which is why I kind of see Tony Stark and Spider-Man having that similarity. And I'm completely aware that Tony Stark does headline and he is the main honcho, but like that's kind of how I see it. And I think that, you know, you could switch the Captain America role with Black Panther or Captain Marvel, either or totally work.
For sure. I think, Tony's definitely he's been, like, forced to take a backseat in the last couple of years. And, I agree with what you're saying.
All right, and, like, last but not least, Game of Thrones. Episode 2 dropped last week. If you have not watched Game of Thrones, this is your chance to skip the podcast to the end. Let us know what you thought. Email us, comment below. We'll have all that information in the description.
Once you have watched the episode.
But for you who have tuned in, like me, 4 years, Game of Thrones, episode 2. What'd you think of it?
Oh, man. I was a little like 50-50 on it at first because... I've been so anxious leading up to the whole, you know, the winter coming and the fight with the White Walkers and seeing the Night King again, that I was really hoping, like, episode 1 was a little underwhelming in terms of it was more expositional and more setup. So I was hoping that there would be a little more, we get closer to action, but deep down I knew that that just wasn't the case. So, but a lot of the conversations that happened and the interactions were super... They were just fantastic. There were some great moments between each characters, but you really saw that person, like, each character standing up for what they believed in or reflecting their core qualities. Like, the little chat between Daenerys and Sansa was fantastic. Oh, that was perfectly done. Just, like, you can slowly see, like, Dany's trying to start manipulating people, and she, you know, she appeals to the whole woman concept of, like, we're two women that are leading, and that usually doesn't happen, so we should stick together. But Sansa is all about her people and her family, because it's the way that Ned raised her. So she stands firm with the North, and she's like, once this is all taken care of, what happens to us? And you can start to see that Daenerys cares less about keeping her word or less about favors and whatnot, and more about her power. And that's where I think her kind of descent. I see it as being a descent into madness that's going to reflect her father. That's my prediction. So you can start to see those seeds really blossom. We saw them planted last season, but I think that was a great example of that. And same goes, like, when she talked to John, like, that scene was like, oh, no. Oh, geez.
Yeah, I totally get that. And I think a lot of people kind of undermine the Sansa character overall because... I look at her like this. So she started out, wanted to be this magical queen and get married to the handsome prince. Mm-hmm. She was the cliche damsel in distress type of character. And over time, what she realized was, boy, this is not the life that I thought it was going to be. And after dealing with Joffrey, and then she was with Tyrion, and then she was with Ramsay Bolton, who is, by the way, the worst character in the entire franchise. Oh, everyone loves to talk about Cersei. And Joffrey, but I mean Ramsay Bolton was a monster that I can't believe, like, how do you even write a character that evil? I mean credit to that actor, because I can't stand Ramsay Bolton. But anyways, so she's been through all the ups and downs, and when John thought that, you know, he had the better of Ramsay Bolton, she was like, "You're a fool if you think this is it." Ends up killing Rickon. When Tyrion walks away from Cersei and goes, "Hey, you know, my sister really means this. I trust her word." She just looks at her like, "Do you not know your own sister? I thought you were the smartest person in Westeros." And here you are. Turns out Sansa was right again. And then she even looks at Jon about Daenerys and is like, "Jon, like, she's a foreigner. People aren't going to accept her. She also only cares about the throne." And John's like, "Oh, no, no." And she's like, "I understand that you love her, but don't be blinded by love." Because she was also in that same position where she thought she was blinded. She was blinded by the love for the crown, similar to Daenerys. And so I just think Sansa is just such an interesting character. And I think she got, like, throughout this whole time, she's been one of those characters that we haven't given a lot of love or attention to, I think. But, I mean, she's just developed and grown into this, like, amazing leader and character. So
yeah, I actually agree. Now that I think about it, I think out of all the Starks, her arc has been the most subtle and something you've really had to pay attention to. Because, you know, Bran goes on this whole adventure to become the Three-Eyed Raven, which we're still confused about. Arya, you can see her train, you know, with the many-faced god and the assassins. And then, obviously, like, Jon has been goddamn near the focal point of the entire series. So it's like Sansa's kind of, like, been slowly growing in the background. And she's finally taken her place as she's in control. Or for the most part, she's always at the mercy of other people. And now she is the one in charge making commands. So definitely, and like...
I was just gonna, say that. Yeah, going back to what you were saying about this big buildup of the White Walkers. A lot of people were upset about, you know, the White Walker battle. I think everyone's kind of foreshadowing, or a lot of people are foreshadowing, that this next episode, episode 3, is gonna be the big battle at Winterfell and the White Walkers. All that stuff is gonna be done. I'm not sure. Did you binge watch the season, or did you watch it throughout the years?
I just watched it throughout the years.
Okay, so I feel like a lot of people who binge watch the show, they all have heard about the dragons and the White Walkers. So this is huge buildup, and they think the whole story is about White Walkers. We got to defeat the White Walkers. When I feel like myself, who's been watching since I actually started watching when around season 2 started.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I told you that story, but I essentially have never seen Lord of the Rings, so I looked up the main actor, it's Ned Stark's character in Lord of the Rings.
Boromir?
Yeah. So I was like, oh, well, he's the main guy in Lord of the Rings. So I looked his name up. Turns out, you know, that's not true. And I saw Game of Thrones, so I thought, oh, maybe he's famous for Game of Thrones. And so I was like, oh, let me watch Game of Thrones. Cause I thought he was an interesting character, or an interesting actor, at least. Mm-hmm. So then I started watching Game of Thrones, and as we all know, he dies really early. I was like, whoa, what? So clearly I was wrong. But then I got so hooked by the show. But anyways, that's my, like, backtrack story of how I got into Thrones. But
how I met your mother.
Yeah, exactly. So... me being someone who's watched it over the years, I've always been interested, okay, who's going to be on the throne? Because I was always under the impression that the Starks were going to be, you know, on the top. Then I was like, oh, guess that's not what this story's about. Then it was, oh, the Lannisters, and then we see how evil they are. Mm-hmm. And so it's just back and forth of who's going to be on top, who's going to be on top. And then you see Daenerys, and you're like, wow, she's this beautiful woman, and not to, you know, like, undermine her personality or who she is, but... let's be honest, that's what everyone was watching when they watched HBO. It was, wow, who's this beautiful, like, fierce leader?
Yeah,
and whether it's right or wrong, you know, it's a different time. And during, you know, when this show had come out, I think there really was no other female character like that. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, now we look at, like, character towards the episode 2 with Tormund talking about, you know, the big giant woman, and I grabbed her breasts, and like... a lot of guys were watching, like, yeah, you know, I love that type of woman, you know? And Daenerys was kind of one of the, I'm not going to say the first, but she was definitely one of the bigger headlines, so that was very interesting to watch. And it's, to me, it's always been about who's going to be on the throne. And I'm not saying that the White Walkers aren't important. They definitely are important, and I think that battle does deserve a lot of attention and detail. And it can't be, you know, a quick fight scene. But I've always assumed that the throne was the most important to people. So I'm just kind of interested to, like, know what your thoughts are on that. What matters more to you? Is it this White Walker battle, or is it the battle for the throne?
It's definitely the battle of the throne matters more to the show. But, like, me was kind of... it's kind of a similar situation, but different in the sense of, like, for me, the first ever scene in the show is the Night's Watch being attacked by the White Walkers outside the wall. And for me, I was like, oh, shit, like, that's crazy. And it was presented that that's that looming threat. And I think I kind of got lost with, like, the anticipation for the White Walkers. Because you just see hints and bits of them. And you're like, what the hell's going on? This is insane.
And it wasn't until, like, the plot.
It wasn't until, like, a few seasons ago in which, like, the first ever White Walker attack was, like, on TV. And that blew my damn mind. And I was like, oh my God, these guys are coming. They're horrifying. There's this dude who can just murder people. Every time they kill somebody, he's part of their army. I'm like, there's no way they can stop this. And so for me, it was kind of like, I think for me, it was slowly gearing towards the throne is what everyone cares about. But at the end of the day, we're stronger together. And the only way we can survive is by stopping this threat. So to me, that always appeared as the end game. Because like he kept telling the characters, like, dude, if we're all dead, no one can rule this world.
Totally.
Like, there's no throne if we die. Like, no one can hide. No one can stop these guys. Damn near, they're indestructible to conventional means. And the resources to defeat them were so scarce. And they're an ancient evil that predates man.
Yeah.
So to me, I was like, oh, it's going to be one of those things where all the characters have to just kind of set aside their differences, come together, and fight. But then, I mean, the show is called Game of Thrones.
Correct, yeah.
So it really does matter. Like, everyone cares about... The only important thing is the bloodlines, who's the rightful heir, and who actually sits on the throne at the end. Because they're probably going to kill the White Walkers, and the story just doesn't end there. So no, I agree. Totally I had to kind of come to an awakening and realize that. Be like, ah, shoot, this isn't about ice zombies... Which is what I love.
And I think the ice zombies thing, like I said, it's important. It's about lineage. And that was one of the things I didn't love about episode two. I thought it was better than episode one personally. The reunions and stuff were nice. But I was more interested in the dynamics of the characters and what was going to happen next. Like, give me some action. Give me some history. That moment where Bran and Tyrion had spoken or talked, I was like, what a shame that, you know, the writers didn't give us, like, the exposition there. Like, I'm interested to know, like, of the history of the White Walkers. I want to know what Bran suggested to Tyrion is. Tyrion is, like, one of the smarter characters in the entire show. So by giving him some of that background information, Bran would have enabled him to help maybe figure it out in the end, which maybe leads to, might kind of lead you to believe that maybe Bran is the Night King. I know that's one of the theories going around. I'm gonna give you a couple quick rapid fire theories that I just want your take in, like,
okay,
30 seconds or less. So one thing no one's really talking about is, if you remember in the very beginning, Robert Baratheon says, I have a son, and Ned Stark says, and he says to him, and you have a daughter, to Ned Stark, one day we'll join our houses. And I think everyone was assuming that meant Sansa and Joffrey, right?
Oh, I think, where are you going with this?
So I think what that was supposed to be about was Gendry and Arya. Oh,
Gendry and Arya, okay. I see that. I like that.
And so I think, I'm not saying they're going to be on the throne, but...
But the houses would still be married in some sense.
And so I was just want to know what you thought about that little theory.
I like that. It's kind of an interesting foreshadow. It's just it just, you know, shows how strange the world can be and how things don't always pan out the way you think they would, but it wasn't as clear of a journey as we'd seen, but it happened nonetheless. So I kind of like that. It's a nice callback. It's the kind of thing that makes you, when you rewatch the series, you'll be able to appreciate.
I rewatched the series, and that's when I kind of noticed that line, and I was like, this is that's why is why I think, you know, episode one and two, people were giving it like such harsh criticism. Like, you got to look at this thing. It's a full portrait. You know, it's like we're just getting like little dabs of the color here and there. But another rapid fire quick theory. What do you think about the White Walkers will resurrect the dead in the crypts?
Oh, 100%. 10,000%. Because, like, I didn't even notice it when I was watching, but, you know, they were super on the nose when they're like, the crypts are safe, guys. The crypts are safe. That's where we're putting all the women and children. The crypts are safe. I don't know if you heard me, but the crypts are safe. And that's
Red flag. What was safe?
Oh, the crypts are safe.
Yeah, just like...
Yeah, my kids are down there. They're fine. All my valuables and belongings, they're just huddled up next to the dead bodies of the old family. So, yeah.
Now, what rapid fire again. What do you think about Danny and John? Do you think they're going to turn on each other? Are you going to end up with each other?
I think Danny turns on John. I think if she gets an opportunity to leave him for dead in this next episode, I think she's going to take it. Because, dude, the look on her face, the only thing she heard when he said, when he told her the truth of his lineage, she didn't even hear that he was a Targaryen. Which is crazy because she's the last Targaryen. Like, so if you think, you'd be like, oh shit, I'm not alone in this world. No, she's like, you're the rightful heir. And I was like,
That left such a nasty like feeling in my mouth. And but what I think is interesting about Thrones, right? You said you thought it was gonna be like a kumbaya type of ending. Come on, like that. There's no way that this is.
No, I knew it wasn't. Whenever you
fall in love with someone, they die. Whenever you think it's the end, it's not the ending. Whenever you think this is a fresh start, it's not a fresh start. You know, they always suck you in some way, which is why I was kind of thinking that we all think Dany's gonna have this moment where she goes, John, you gotta choose me or the throne. John's gonna have his honorable moment. Or where he has to, like, kill her. He doesn't do it. Turns around. She stabs him in the back. We all hate Dany. But that's too easy. It can't be that way. So I actually think that they're both going to step down from being on the throne and give it to Sansa.
Nah, I think my prediction is that Daenerys is going to relive the arc that her father, the Mad King, lives. And essentially she becomes corrupted with power. And is kind of driven mad by it.
But if we've already seen that plot, don't you think that the writers would kind of change it up?
Because no, that's what's but it'd be happened? Kind of like a disappointing fall from grace, where it's just like the appeal of the throne. Like, you know, you either win or you die. So it's like in her pursuit of trying to be this noble leader and trying to lead people into a new age, she's slowly. The fact that, because remember, she was talking about, oh, like, how can I free all these people and break the wheel and try new things? But yet when push came to shove, she brought her dragons and she burnt people alive that didn't listen to her. And when the dragons were flying over Winterfell in the first episode and everyone was, like, screaming, she, like, smiled in kind of, like, a creepy way. So it's like, I kind of see it as more of, it would be a tragedy that a character that had such noble purpose and cause to start with, just the terrors of war and just the desire for power can corrupt that. That's my take.
Oh, I see.
So it would end up being like the tragedy of Daenerys rather than, you know, like...
I think... I almost expect that in a way, which I'm just trying to play devil's advocate a bit because I just feel like... I mean, maybe we've watched too many TV shows and movies, which is why we can see it. But I just feel like that is, it would be really tragic and it would be sad to see this fall from grace, but I don't know. It just, they gave so much attention to the baby thing of them having sex and like, oh, are they aunt and cousin? Are they brother and sister? Are they mother and son? You know? So I feel like to not flesh out that relationship would be very... To bring so much attention to it, it's like you said about the Crips. It's very bizarre, you know? But perhaps they just don't do that.
I mean, perhaps that's part of the tragedy.
Yeah. No, so totally.
Yeah. I think, like, we've potentially kind of gone too far in the moment, like, whereas, like, you're saying, like, you almost expect that too much, but that's just because of where we are now. But, like, in the grand scheme of the show, you wouldn't have expected that going forward. So I think that we have to kind of think of it in the scope of who our characters are and the arcs they've gone on, like throughout the entirety of the show, because I think the overarching change would have been something that we didn't see coming. But now that we're kind of getting close to it, I think we're second guessing everything. So it's like, I think this is going to happen differently because this is already happening. But you're like, that's too easy. They're definitely going to do a double take and trick you into think that's going to happen. So it's not going to happen. So it's like, we just kind of have to see it. Yeah. But I still think that in the grand scheme of the characters, I think that would still be, I think that would be a successful tragedy for the character. Yeah. That's just me though.
All right, so give me your final three statements, final three predictions, whatever you want to call it, before we wrap up this podcast, the first one ever, which I think went pretty well.
Yeah, this is a fun time.
I want your predictions about who do you think will die the next episode, who will end up on the throne, and who will kill the Night King.
Okay, who's going to die next episode? Brianna Tarth is going to die. Her arc is complete, 100%.
Oh, man, dude. She is. Again, I think the same thing like I just said. Like, if that happens, like, we all see it coming. Like, that's why I think it's got to be someone personally, like Tyrion or something crazy.
Nah, see, what I think is that it's going to be... I think it's going to be Brianna Tarth gets killed, turns into a White Walker, and then Arya Stark actually has to kill her, no. Which mirrors
Please.
The duel, which mirrors the sparring match they had. It was like, now she actually has to kill her. That's man. Just me. I just thought of that today.
I mean, it seems like there's going to be a lot of tears in these next couple episodes.
Yeah, I definitely think like a lot of the side people are going to die, like that have no purpose. I think there's probably a chance that Beric, the guy with the flaming sword.
Yeah,
the guy who
Grey Worm.
Grey Worm already died. Like, the next season, no. The next episode hasn't even started yet. He's already Please. Dead.
I like Grey Worm, though. He's a tough guy.
I think
Theon could possibly die as well. There's a lot of talk about Theon and Sansa being in love, and they might have something, but I just think, come on, like, it's their brother and sister. And everyone's like, you know, there's incest in the show, but come on, it's like, it's really not that much incest, is there?
We don't need to double down on the incest sandwich here.
Yeah. Alright, so, who do you think will kill the... Actually, you know what? I'm gonna leave my Kill the Night King take... For the final statement, because
okay.
I got a surprise for you. But who do you think will end up on the throne?
Oh shoot! This is I'd rather do the Night King one. I have like a better idea. Who's gonna be on the throne?
Well, I'll tell you what I think. I think Sansa, as I said before, Sansa is my sleeper. I think because as all the things I mentioned earlier, her leadership, her character arc, where she's finally become. I think a lot of people didn't love Sansa at first, so
yeah, so
I
think that'd be a nice redemption of the character,
right? It's a nice redemption. It's kind of like it's essentially what you said about Daenerys, the opposite of that, you know, how she fell from grace. It's her rise, and she's been through so much. I mean, god, that scene where she's raped by what's Ramsay. His name, yeah. Ramsay. Oh, that was horrible. It was hard to watch.
Yeah. In the fucking show, dude.
Oh man, that was tough. So I mean, she's just had such a journey, and she really is a sweetheart at the end of the day. Can't hate her. But my quote unquote obvious or pick A would be Daenerys, and I think Daenerys will do something despicable, maybe that goes against her grain, like kill her own dragon or whatever. But then in the end, as you said, she actually ends up learning that I can't behave this way. I have to listen to Tyrion, because she hasn't listened to Tyrion at all. And he's been wrong twice now, so I think the third time he's got to be right, because Tyrion's typically right about these things. And I feel like she's going to have a nice farewell to the dragons. They won't last while she's still there. And she's going to rule over peacefully the end.
Game of Thrones. Hell no. No, I think it's going to be a scenario where Jon has the opportunity to take the throne. And he pulls like a George Washington. He's like, nah, dude. I'm going to my farm, and he's going to dip, and I think that's where Sansa steps in, I think. Sansa seems like the most capable person to lead. It's going to be tough, but I think it's going to be interesting.
I think in my Sansa stance as well, I think she doesn't lead everything. She kind of does this United States type of thing where we have a president, but each individual place has their own representative,
yeah,
and
rule over is governed, yeah.
They can rule and govern themselves. So,
because yeah, I now that I think about it, like, she wouldn't like willingly leave the North.
No, and she repeatedly keeps speaking on the North and how it's important for the North. That's why I think, regardless of who's on the throne, they're not going to be ruling the North. I'll tell you that much.
Oh hell no, bro. There's no way.
All right.
I mean, worst case scenario, they just have the Iron Throne shipped to Winterfell.
Right, exactly. That's what I think it's heading as well. All right, so your final stance. Who kills the Night King?
Oh man, I think it's gotta be Jon. Like, they just had so many like square offs that it's gotta come to that point where Jon's just like, all right, dog, 1v1 me on just 1v1 360 no scope.
A lot of people think Jon Snow is a boring character as well. They're like, yeah, he's not very aggressive. I think he's just very intelligent about when he attacks and doesn't forcefully. He doesn't try to be the macho man. You know, he knows his place.
He picks his
fight. Yeah, he picks his fight. And you know, say what you want, but he went against the people at the wall, the Night's Watch, mm-hmm. survived that. He went against the Wildlings, code where, you know, you're not supposed to be friends with the Wildlings. You can't talk to them. They're horrible people. He's like, look, they're people. I'm people. Daenerys, everyone said, don't bend the knee to her. He's like, no, I'm going to bend the knee because this is more important. He just seems like a guy who is really right in justice and understands that, you know, the throne and sometimes actions in life aren't about this royalty and line and lineage. And that's because he's never had that lineage, but he's been in this weird hybrid where he's a Stark, but he's not. So I think he understands that more than anyone else. But get this. Because honor means so much, and because it has to be a Stark, to kill the Night King, I think Ned Stark comes back from the dead to kill the Night King somehow.
It's the dumbest take I've ever heard in my life.
Dun, dun, dun.
You're the worst. Dude, what if... Oh, wait, no. Ned Stark's body is definitely, like, not in Winterfell, but, like, how sad would that be if his corpse came back? And, like...
Can you imagine that, like, they just end the show, like, Ned Stark just goes, cuts off his neck, and he's like, yeah, that's Thrones.
It's crazy. Nah, it'd just be crazy, like, if, like, Ned Stark's corpse comes back and Jon has to fight it.
Oh, like, man, that'd be, like, an awesome scene.
And, like, Arya watches, and she's like, no, Dad. It's like...
But I am very curious to know what happens down in that, the crypts and
the
all.
The crypts?
Yeah. I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens in the crypts.
Dude, nothing's going to happen down there. It's the safest place in Winterfell, didn't you hear?
yeah, exactly. Maybe, wouldn't it be sad if that little girl became a Nightwalker?
Oh, she's gonna, dude.
100%. Oh, man.
She's the first one to go. She's already turning right now.
This show. Yeah, she's down there saying she's gonna defend the North. I'm like, can we make her the queen? Like,
yo, Lady Mormont, she's the best.
Oh, yeah, Lady Mormont.
She's the best. And when her and Jorah talk to each other, because I forgot that they're related.
Oh, that was a great moment.
That was a nice little moment. That's cool.
Yeah, nothing beats the everyone drinking and sitting around the fire though. That was like one of those moments. You snap the screen, you make a poster, and you go, "Wow, this was a great series." You know?
Oh, that was good. It was starting to reach those moments in TV shows I've seen in the past where it's like, before the big battle, they always kind of sit around and talk about what they've done throughout the show. I'm like, oh god! I'm like, we're not really gonna sit here and do this for like the next 40 minutes. Like, please.
But, I mean, I honestly felt like pouring a drink and, like talking to him through the TV. Like, guys, what are we doing here, you know? Yeah,
facts.
But it did have that feel, that sentiment that, like, you know, this was the final night for a lot of them. And yeah. I think that's what the writers want us to feel. So, I guess you'll have to stay tuned to find out.
Oh, geez. Yeah, you can expect a post-show reaction from us. It's definitely going to be in the works.
All right, well, that does it for us. That is the end of the first podcast of The Last Podcast on Earth. Again, I am Mr. Robot.
And I'm Skywalker.
And we are signing out. Take care.
Take it easy.